Specifically, the central bank will experiment with conditional spending, using smart contracts to restrict where and what users can spend money on. If these features are implemented, it will empower the Kremlin with micro-controls over Russian spending activity. Officials could program funds to expire, restrict purchases to regime-approved goods, or block transactions at certain locations, leaving users with no financial autonomy or privacy. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. This show is brought to you by the Blockstream Jade Plus hardware wallet. I've got some great videos showing how easy it is to use and set up, and securely holding your keys and just accessing it in the green wallet is just too easy to leave yourself at risk to just not do it, in my opinion. Check it out. You can get 10% off with code GUY. It is also brought to you by the BitKit wallet. And I finally have gotten to use PubKey, and I am super interested. We will be doing an episode on that probably pretty soon. But check out everything that Synonym is building, and I love their BitKit wallet. Links and details will be right in the show notes. And of course, HRF, the Human Rights Foundation, I'm honored that they are supporting my work as well. And actually, this will be the, I'm going to be doing the audio for their Financial Freedom Report, which honestly I had been considering, I've considered doing in the past numerous times on the show just because there's so much good news and I've actually referenced it or I've used things that I learned from the Financial Freedom Report in the show. But I'm now going to be doing audio for the report and having that available for you guys. And also maybe they'll be publishing it in their actual newsletter email, but the turnaround on that would have to be really, really quick, and we haven't really sorted out specifics on that. So right now, we are actually reading Financial Freedom Report number 67, which was from the end of March. But there are a number of things in this one that I really want to hit, and there's a perspective that I think, you know, maybe I'm just being contrarian here, but I kind of want to really push back against some stuff about the whole medium of exchange versus store of value that I think is an really unpopular opinion. But I want to read the Financial Freedom Report first to kind of explain, to have a good foundation for why I think I'm increasingly leaning toward a very different take on this. And I'm very happy to hear everybody's hate and vitriol about my stance on this. So fire away, but I'll let you get mad at the guy's take section and not head it off before we get into the Financial Freedom Report. So shout out to HRF and all of the amazing things that they do. Don't forget to check out the newsletter. I have links and details. So there's a lot of good news and then also some really cool tools in this one. And also, you know, another thing I just want to say, one of the things I loved most about starting this show was that it was forcing me to sit down and read every single article that I was interested in Bitcoin or thought was important to cover. And I had to read the whole thing. And I feel like it gave me a foundation to talk about all sorts of different topics and really kind of dig into the nitty gritty, read opposing arguments. And it basically just forced me to take a very broad and deep exploration of every single topic that I covered because, I mean, it forced me to have to know, like, I felt like an idiot if I was saying things after not, you know, I didn't even read the opposing argument, or I just read a headline in like the first paragraph. You know, I talked about that a lot early on in the show. It just kind of forced me to dig, like really dig into everything and actually feel like I knew what I was talking about before I had the balls to actually just jabber about it. And I will say, this is the thing that when I agreed to do the audio for the Financial Freedom Report, part of it was a selfish thing where I just wanted to force myself to have to go through all of this because there is just so much good information and news that I wanted to kind of have it in writing that I was going to make myself do this because I don't keep up with it as well as I wish I did. So anyway, that's my thoughts about that. And hopefully I'll at least be referencing a lot, but there should be, if you want to listen to them in this feed, every once in a while, I know there will be one that I just have to dig into some topic or some news item. So you'll probably get the Freedom Report in the Bitcoin Audible feed as well. But I'm going to have a different feed just for the Freedom Report for anybody who wants to listen to the report and doesn't like reading emails. All right, enough preamble. Let's go ahead and get into today's read with a guy's take to follow. And it's titled The Weekly Financial Freedom Report. Number 67 by the Human Rights Foundation, published on March 27th, 2025. Narrated by Guy Swan of the Bitcoin Audible podcast. The Financial Freedom Report is a newsletter focusing on how currency plays a key role in the civil liberties and human rights struggles of those living under authoritarian regimes. We also spotlight new tools and applications that can help individuals protect their financial freedom. Good morning, readers. Turkey's currency plunged to a record low after the arrest of Istanbul Mayor Ekrem İmamoğlu, one of President Recep Tayyip Erdoğan's main political rivals. This follows a pattern of escalating repression of opposition figures, which have been described as an effort to suppress competition ahead of primary elections. As economic conditions deteriorate, Erdoğan is resorting to desperate measures, blocking social media, arresting dissenters, and tear-gassing protests to maintain power over an increasingly restless populace. In the Caribbean, we shed light on Cubans' struggles accessing remittances sent from family members abroad. This is a symptom of the regime's strict monetary controls over foreign currency. Cubans face long delays or can't withdraw cash due to bank liquidity shortages. And when they can, remittances are converted into pesos at the overvalued official Cuban exchange rate. This effectively allows the Communist Party of Cuba, the PCC, to loot the value from Cuban remittances. In Freedom Tech News, we highlight Demand Pool, the first ever Stratum V2 mining pool. Stratum V2 is a mining protocol designed to decentralize Bitcoin mining by letting individual miners create their own block templates, rather than relying on centralized pools to do so for them. This improves censorship resistance and promotes a more decentralized and resilient Bitcoin network, critical features for human rights defenders and nonprofits using Bitcoin to protect against financial repression from authoritarian regimes. We end by featuring Vijay Selvam's new book, Principles of Bitcoin. It offers a clear first principles guide to understanding how Bitcoin's technology interacts with economics, politics, philosophy, and human rights. Whether you're new to Bitcoin or looking to deepen your understanding, this book provides a solid foundation, and it even features a foreword by HRF Chief Strategy Officer Alex Gladstein. Now, let's dive right in. Turkey, Lira in freefall as Erdoğan arrests political rival. Turkey's lira plunged to a record low after officials arrested Istanbul Mayor Ekrem İmamoğlu, President Recep Tayyip Erdoğan's main political rival. İmamoğlu's arrest comes ahead of primary elections and follows the increasing repression of opposition figures in recent months, including the suspension of political opposition accounts on X. Officials also arrested Burak Gökçek, head of the Istanbul Planning Agency, for publishing data exposing the country's deepening poverty. The country's fallout and political repression have sparked protests in Istanbul despite a four-day ban. The regime is responding with tear gas and rubber bullets. Meanwhile, Turks dissenting online risk joining over a dozen other citizens recently arrested for, quote, provocative social media posts. NetBlocks reports that the Turkish regime imposed restrictions on social media and messaging to quell the uprising of Turks struggling with financial conditions and deepening repression. Cuba. Banks hijack citizen remittances. Cubans are struggling to access remittances sent from their families abroad. This is because the regime completely controls all incoming foreign currency transfers. When remittances arrive, communist banking authorities force their conversion into collapsing Cuban pesos, or moneda libremente convertible, MLC, Cuba's digital currency with limited use. On top of this, Cubans receive pesos in their accounts based on the official Cuban exchange rate, which is far below the informal market rate. This allows the regime to opaquely siphon off much of the remittance's real value. Even when the money clears, Cubans face long delays or can't withdraw the cash due to banks' liquidity shortages. Many Cubans are accusing these banks of, quote, hijacking their remittances. As inflation, electrical blackouts, and food shortages continue, remittances are more critical than ever for Cuban families. Yet they're blocked at every turn by a system designed to impoverish them. Pakistan announces plans to regulate digital assets. Pakistan announced plans to create a regulatory framework for Bitcoin and digital assets to attract foreign investment and domestic economic activity. It's a peculiar shift for a regime that regularly suspends the internet, censors social media, represses opposition, and burdens its people with the highest cost of living in Asia. We suspect the plans indicate efforts to control the industry rather than empower individuals. The military-backed regime is also exploring a central bank digital currency, or CBDC, and tightening controls on VPN use, which are hardly the hallmarks of leadership committed to permissionless financial systems. But perhaps it matters little. Grassroots Bitcoin adoption in Pakistan already ranks among the highest in the world, with an estimated 15 to 20 million users turning to digital assets to preserve their savings, circumvent financial controls, and escape the failures of a collapsing fiat system. HRF supported Bitcoin Pakistan with a grant to help translate resources into Urdu, a language spoken by 60 million people trapped in this repressive scenario. Russia, piloting CBDC in Tatarstan to test smart contract functionality. Russia's central bank plans to pilot its CBDC, the digital ruble, in Tatarstan to test smart contract functionality. Specifically, the central bank will experiment with conditional spending, using smart contracts to restrict where and what users can spend money on. If these features are implemented, it will empower the Kremlin with micro-controls over Russian spending activity. Officials could program funds to expire, restrict purchases to regime-approved goods, or block transactions at certain locations, leaving users with no financial autonomy or privacy. Those who oppose the Russian dictatorship, such as activists, nonprofits, and dissenters, could be debanked with more ease, their assets frozen or confiscated without recourse. Nicaragua. Government mandates public employees declare all assets. In Nicaragua, dictator Daniel Ortega intensified state financial surveillance by mandating all public servants to disclose information on all personal and family assets. The mandate requires all public employees to declare everything from personal bank accounts, loans, vehicles, and other assets, as well as the assets and accounts of immediate family members. Those who do not comply face the threat of termination. Ironically, despite the law requiring such disclosure, Ortega himself has not declared his assets since 2006. Under the guise of regulatory compliance, this policy is yet another link in the chain, tightening state surveillance over Nicaraguan society. Bitcoin adoption continues to grow in this repressed Central American nation. Recommended content. Rule Breakers: The True Story of Roya Mahboob. Rule Breakers is a new film that tells the true story of Roya Mahboob, Afghanistan's first female tech CEO, who empowered young girls in Afghanistan with financial literacy, robotics, and financial freedom through Bitcoin. The film recounts Mahboob's courageous work educating these girls despite huge personal risks under a regime that bans their education. It follows the story of Afghan Dreamers, the country's first all-girls robotics team, and the obstacles they overcome to compete on the world stage. Rule Breakers is a testament to the power of education, innovation, and resilience in the face of oppression. It's now in theaters, and you can watch the trailer here. The link will be available in the show notes. Bitcoin News. Demand Pool. First Stratum V2 mining pool launches. Bitcoin mining could become more decentralized and censorship-resistant with the launch of Demand Pool, the first mining pool to ever implement Stratum V2. Stratum V2 is open-source software that allows miners to build their own block templates, enabling more individual mining and less dependence on large and centralized mining pools. This helps maintain Bitcoin's key features, its decentralized, permissionless, and uncensorable nature, all of which are crucial for human rights defenders and nonprofits bypassing the financial repression and surveillance of authoritarian regimes. Learn more at the link provided in the show notes and the newsletter. Bitcoin mining. Three solo blocks found. Three separate solo miners mined Bitcoin blocks in the past 7 days. This marks the second, third, and fourth solo blocks mined in the past 2 weeks alone, hinting at a surge in home mining. This promotes greater decentralization within the Bitcoin network because solo miners have little functional ability to censor. In contrast, large mining pools are points of failure that centralized interests can more easily pressure, to the detriment of activists and human rights defenders. The first block was mined on March 21st by a miner using a self-hosted FutureBit Apollo machine that earned 3.125 Bitcoin plus fees for processing block 888,737. Just days later, a solo miner with under 1 terahash per second of self-hosted hash rate found block 888,989, which became just the third block ever to be mined using an open-source BitAxe device. Most recently, on March 24th, a solo miner using a $300 setup successfully mined block 889,240. Crux adds Taproot and Miniscript support. Crux, which is open-source software for building your own Bitcoin signing devices or hardware for Bitcoin self-custody, released an update that enhances privacy and flexibility. The update introduces support for Taproot, a past Bitcoin upgrade that improves privacy and security, and Miniscript, a simplified way to create more complex Bitcoin transaction rules. This allows users to manage multi-signature wallets, where more than one private key is required to interact with your Bitcoin, in a more private and flexible way. It also enables spending conditions that are harder to censor and easier to verify. Crux continues to support the struggle for financial freedom and human rights by breaking down barriers to Bitcoin self-custody. HRF has recognized this impact and awarded grants to open-source developers working on Crux to advance this mission. Cashew, developing tap-to-pay eCash. Kali, the creator of Cashew, an open-source Chalmian eCash protocol for Bitcoin integrated with the Lightning Network, is developing a new tap-to-pay feature that enables instant, offline eCash payments via NFC. eCash functions as a bearer asset, meaning the funds are stored directly on the user's device. With tap-to-pay, it can be transferred with a single tap, similar to tapping your credit card. More generally, eCash offers fast, private transactions resistant to surveillance and censorship. But for activists and dissenters, this particular advancement makes private and permissionless payments more accessible and user-friendly. This development will be worth following closely. Watch a demo here. The link will be available in the show notes and, of course, the newsletter. OpenSats announces 10th wave of Bitcoin grants. OpenSats, a public nonprofit that supports open-source software and projects, announced its 10th wave of grants supporting Bitcoin initiatives. This round includes funding for Stable Channels, which enables stabilized Bitcoin-backed balances on the Lightning Network, allowing users to peg Bitcoin to fiat currencies in a self-custodial way that provides stable, censorship-resistant payments. OpenSats also renewed its support for Floresta, a lightweight Bitcoin node, a computer that runs the Bitcoin software. It lowers entry barriers to running Bitcoin, helping make the network more decentralized and censorship resistant. Bitcoin Policy Institute. launches Bitcoin Summer Research Program. The Bitcoin Student Network, or BSN, and the Bitcoin Policy Institute, BPI, are teaming up to offer students an 8-week research internship this summer. The program is part of BPI's Research Experiences for Undergraduates initiative and invites students passionate about the future of money, financial inclusion, and Bitcoin's civil liberties impacts to conduct hands-on research. Participants will also receive mentorship from BPI researchers. The program runs from June 9th to August 8th, 2025, and includes an in-person colloquium in Washington, D.C. It's an incredible opportunity for students worldwide, especially those living in oppressive regimes, to get involved with Bitcoin. Applications are open until April 7th. Apply here. Link in the show notes as well as the newsletter. Recommended content: Principles of Bitcoin by Vijay Selvam. Principles of Bitcoin by Vijay Selvam is a new book offering a first principles guide to understanding Bitcoin's technology, economics, politics, and philosophy. With a foreword by HRF Chief Strategy Officer Alex Gladstein, the book cuts through the noise to explain why Bitcoin stands alone as a tool for individual empowerment and financial freedom. Selvam's work makes the case for Bitcoin as a once-in-history invention shaping a more decentralized and equitable future. Read it here. Link in the show notes as well as the newsletter. If this email was forwarded to you and you enjoyed reading it, please consider subscribing to the Financial Freedom Report here. And support the newsletter by donating Bitcoin to HRF's Financial Freedom Program via BTC Pay. Links for all of these available in the show notes, as well as a link directly to the newsletter. Want to contribute to the newsletter? Submit tips, stories, news, and ideas by emailing ffreport@hrf.com. The Bitcoin Development Fund, or BDF, is accepting grant proposals on an ongoing basis. The Bitcoin Development Fund is looking to support Bitcoin developers, community builders, and educators. Submit proposals here. You know, one of the things about the HRF, the Freedom Report that always gets me is that, you know, from a purely Western perspective, we hear about all these CBDC pilots and everybody talks about CBDCs and all of this stuff, but largely its explicit application is not really relevant. There's a lot of pushback and there's not this huge adoption, they're not being pushed out. There's just an enormous amount of kind of default assumption, even in like really, I would say, declining places like the UK. It's just not super easy to get the idea of CBDCs off the ground and acceptable by the public. Or at least to me, it seems that way. I mean, the U.S., there's a lot of pushback in the U.S., and it doesn't feel super close to home when I'm hearing updates about it. But I'm constantly hearing, like, these things are actively happening and being implemented all around the world right now under tons of authoritarian and dictatorial regimes. Funds are being frozen, bank accounts are being shuttered, explicit smart contracts to control when and how people can use their funds are being made. These aren't like maybe threats to a lot of people. This isn't theory to a ton of people around the world. This is every day. Like, they don't have access. They do not have options. And these things are being forced onto them. And so, from that context, the more and more I think about this, the more I keep thinking this is a pretty sensible conclusion to make. If you don't need to use Bitcoin as a medium of exchange, don't. Everybody's trying to force this circular economy, and it failed if people aren't using it for this, and we're not using it circularly online, and we don't have all these alternative markets. Understand, alternative markets will arise where they are needed. Use the example of Pakistan, 15 to 20 million in direct adoption of just general of Bitcoin and digital assets. Like, these are people who need, like explicitly need, because they don't have another option. These tools and this monetary network and alternative gray markets to eat, to literally survive. And now if you want to be on a Bitcoin standard and you want to use Bitcoin, I think that is immensely valuable. And I think it is supporting the Bitcoin economy. I think it is a good thing to have a robust circular economy. I'm not saying that's bad, but the network and all of the tools and technology are not there yet for the whole world to be on this. The liquidity is not there yet for it to be a strong medium of exchange. You can't force these things. And so if you do not need it, if you can just buy crap off of Amazon, your bank account isn't being frozen because of your protest, if you are feeling guilted into using Bitcoin as a medium of exchange, don't bother. Like, just save in Bitcoin and let its value rise, which is good. Keep its value stable and bolster its value when it is low, buy it, because then you are helping these people and you are not raising the fees on chain. And even more importantly and more discounted or underappreciated, in my opinion, is that you are letting people who have, you're helping support people who are doing investments in the Bitcoin economy, in the Lightning Network tools, in the ARC tools, to have more runway and funds for directing towards solving this problem, so that we do have the market liquidity and enough people who actually desire the currency to start talking about medium of exchange. So we do have a million different payment options and networks where it is even, where it is actually non-custodial and it is private, even though it's provided by some service provider, or, you know, you have Lightning channels or a channel pool or an ARC provider, something like this. I just really think the conversation around this is so presumptive that, you know, the problem in the US, the large problem in the West, save for, you know, some individual instances and, you know, COVID vaccine protests and this sort of stuff, the big problem largely is slow and steady inflation eating away wages. Basically, the West slowly becoming the, creating the impoverishing conditions of the developing and authoritarian regimes. So there is very important value in this. This is not something that is not useful to people in the West, but it is less useful as a transaction medium than it is as a savings medium. And the conditions around the world and the situations of each individual person and community is very, very different. There's no reason to force it into a position that it isn't useful or isn't super needed as. This is a critical global network for everyone to use and share. And I think there's a bit of an element, and I say this as someone who uses it on a Bitcoin standard and I use transactions, but there are situations where most of it is, I don't have much of an option. I'm paying people overseas that I just don't even begin to know. I'm not going to wire a bunch of people money. In fact, some of them I could not wire. I wouldn't be able to pay. But in my opinion, just don't feel guilty about not clogging up the chain. If you don't have a really important reason to use it, just keep earning Bitcoin and put it away into cold storage. You're not hurting anybody. You're not stopping anything. Quite to the contrary. Medium of exchange phase will never happen. You can't force it. It requires there to be enough liquidity that all merchants and all people earning Bitcoin want to, or excuse me, earning money, all want to earn in Bitcoin. That's when it happens. Medium of exchange will naturally evolve, will naturally come about from a store of value becoming a widely and broadly accepted and desirable store of value. That's how it has always happened in monetary history. Something becomes desirable and liquid in its own right, such that it can be used as a medium of exchange. But you can't use it as a medium of exchange in order to force it to be liquid enough and desirable enough that people would use it. It just feels to me like trying to design an iPhone in, you know, 1997, when it's clear that that's where we're headed, but the market and the infrastructure is just not ready for that yet. And it's not like there's not value in all of it. In being a part of the circular economy, trying to live on a Bitcoin standard, like some hardcore Bitcoiners actually do, using all of the tools and making sure you can show other people who do need to use these things, like critically need to use these things, how to use them, to provide feedback, because we're developing tons of different payment networks and tools. And what are the limitations? What are the trade-offs of each of these things? Like, this is all important. Like, the entire stack of all of the things is all important, and it is all necessary to building out a global ecosystem where we do have a broad monetary base as a store of value, a medium of exchange, and a globally liquid unit of account. So again, if you want to, do it. Don't feel guilty about it, but don't feel guilty about not doing it either. Bitcoin hasn't failed if people in the West largely use it for the thing that is most needed in the West, while people in authoritarian and dictatorial regimes use it for the element that it is most needed for in authoritarian and dictatorial regimes. Like, the whole world isn't the US. And it is still very critical that we recognize, or at least acknowledge, the difference between a technological shift and a monetary shift, and stop trying to force the monetary shift to happen faster than it's naturally going to happen. And also, I'd say we have a really big misunderstanding in this constant claim that, oh, we're just going to go right back to gold. Bitcoin is just going to become fiat again if we're not using it directly as a medium of exchange. And I think it's a total misunderstanding. I'm going to have a video about this. This is what I talked about at BitBlock Boom. And I think it's a total misunderstanding of where gold went wrong, why gold went wrong, and what the differences between them are. The trade-offs and the scaling problems of gold and Bitcoin are opposite. Like, they're not different. They're literally inverted. So I do not think that narrative has the connection that everybody thinks it is. And again, everybody is looking at it from the individual person in the West and people using cards and banks, and it's just, I think it's a really narrow view rather than like backing up and looking at the big picture, looking where the big volumes are, where the big transactions are, and where is it and why is it that fiat is able to suck $62 trillion out of the developing world into the modern world, and it's not retail. Like, it's just objectively not in retail payments. That is where a lot of the autonomy and privacy problems are, but it's not largely where the fiat money printing and the capital misallocation of the world problems are. And both of those are problems that need to be massively solved. But the bigger one is the capital misallocation and the inability to price time and resources both between competing countries and within merchant markets and between classes, between the middle class and the lower class and the upper class, like, you name it, all coordination across demographics and groups based on their proximity, their political proximity and their financial proximity to spigots, to money spigots, debt creation, and the global reserve currency. That is where the world, like, hundreds of trillions of dollars in capital get out of balance. And that's not a retail e-commerce payments problem. And we do have a full stack of problems. We do have a retail e-commerce direct peer-to-peer payment problem, without a doubt. And it needs to be solved, without a doubt. But while it is still in its only going to scale to a couple 10 million users day-to-day, then if you're in the United States, don't feel guilty about not using it like that, because people in Pakistan and Russia and China and Turkey need that a lot more. What I think the West needs to be focused on, what I think the United States and the EU is, the EU is starting to get to a point where, I don't know, their situation and their political culture seems to mirror a lot of, like, very scary places in the world more and more every day. But it's also hard to say exactly what's boots on the ground problems versus, you know, the most tweeted thing on Twitter, right? But regardless, for the people who, let's just say, take the United States, for example, since I think a lot of these problems are not really on our doorstep yet, I think the best thing we could do is build infrastructure and build systems and services for earning Bitcoin. Like, what does the West like to do? Buy Bitcoin. People want to buy and invest in Bitcoin. Every single thing, whether you're, this is why, and I've actually been talking with Oshi, we've been talking about, like, maybe even doing like a sponsorship. But this is actually one of the reasons why I am super interested in that company and other companies like them. They're building, creating things for other people to earn Bitcoin. Rather than needing a circular economy, how about we have every person who is a Bitcoiner able to use tools that allow them to get paid in Bitcoin? How about every company that wants to accept Bitcoiners have a way to have loyalty points that are just sats rewards like Fold? How about we spread out and expand the liquidity of the people buying Bitcoin in every way, shape, or form? How about we turn every points earning system and reward system in the country into something that just uses sats? How about we offer services that let people tip and then pay out to people in sats from all over the world so that people in India and Pakistan can have an account that talks to people in the West and can get tipped or zapped or whatever, and that they can withdraw without the threat of confiscation, without the censorship? But anyway, I see so many people who are like poo-poo, like who are just like, oh man, if we're not using this as a medium of exchange 2 days ago, we failed. This is all we're done. And it just seems completely intuitive to me that for that to actually emerge in any sort of sustainable sense, the merchant has to want the Bitcoin more than the consumer does. I pay people that I work with in Bitcoin because it's cheaper and easier for me to do so, and because I demand everything that I earn directly in Bitcoin. So I get Bitcoin, and thus it's easier for me to pay out in Bitcoin. But when I have the opportunity and the fees are less going through Fold because I have the Fold Pro or Premium, whatever it is, I use my debit and I will be using my Fold credit card to get more sats than it's costing me in fees. Like if I use the credit card and then pay it off with a the spread's usually like 0.4% inside the thing. So if I'm getting 2% points, I'm earning sats. I use the Fold because of the sats, or I use the Fold card because of the sats that I get from using the Fold card. I'm trying to earn sats, which is why I use fiat. So all of my decisions around that are about me trying to keep as much Bitcoin as I possibly can and lower conversions and fees and all of that stuff. And as a merchant, as quote unquote, the merchant who sells sponsorships and works with other companies, I demand payment in Bitcoin. And the companies that said they wouldn't, I worked with some of them, but I've just kind of like, I don't want to do that anymore. I want the Bitcoin too much. And the idea that we as consumers are supposed to demand that other people take Bitcoin, I disagree. I think I should demand a discount if you want my Bitcoin. Like, we're specifically talking about an environment where Bitcoin is monetizing and people don't want fiat and they do want Bitcoin. The idea that we're going to just kind of like force everybody to guilt trip into using Bitcoin directly, it just seems so intuitively very seriously swimming directly against the current, in my opinion. And it seems like a hyper-focus on one very narrow thing rather than looking at the entire picture of all of the problems that need to get solved and how there are different environments that are going to be best for solving each of these problems. And whether the West is using it today as a medium of exchange isn't really relevant, in my opinion, again, to whether or not it becomes a broad medium of exchange. I think the various places in the world that need the different characteristics and need Bitcoin for their different reasons are using it for those different reasons. And that seems perfectly natural and perfectly fine to me. I don't know. At this point, I'm just repeating myself, but that's kind of my feeling and my take on that. And I am really curious what other people think. And please feel free to tell me I hate Bitcoin and I'm not here for the right reasons. You know, go ahead and drop all your bullshit. I am happy to read how I am wrong if you actually have a coherent thought about it. I mean, anybody who's listened to this show, I think, is perfectly aware that I want to get to the cypherpunk future. Like, obviously, the goal is to solve every part of the problem stack that we are dealing with. And one of those is absolutely sovereign payments, peer-to-peer e-cash, privacy, circular unrestricted markets. But I think a lot of people just seem to be forgetting how big, like how huge this problem is. Bitcoin is still tiny. And I mean tiny. Gold is tiny in comparison to the problem. And also the various types of problems that we are experiencing. There's technological problems. There are payment problems. There are privacy problems. There are infrastructure problems. There are monetary problems. There are pricing imbalance problems. There are time imbalance problems. Like, if just because only one is getting solved or one is being focused on right now, and, you know, five don't seem to be making progress at this particular moment in this particular environment, doesn't mean that those five, this is the whole world. It doesn't mean nothing is happening, and it doesn't mean that nothing can happen or is going to happen on those problems. It just means that there might be one that's bigger or more important or more directly relevant right now. What we need to keep is a decentralized, permissionless foundation, and all of the problems can be solved as the problems arise and are relevant to the people who experience them. And it feels like a lot of this technological revolution impatience, like the expected timeline of a technological shift, trying to be forced on a monetary transition, which in my opinion is also what crypto did. And I don't mean it's like, oh, you're all crypto bros, you bunch of dum-dums. That's not what I'm meaning. I'm meaning I think it comes from a similar place of thinking of, oh, we have to be doing that. This is genuinely why I think stablecoins are going to be bigger and more successful, more broadly adopted all around the world, because there's going to be a fiat consolidation due to technological changes in the global infrastructure, at the exact same time that Bitcoin will have a monetary foundational shift. But I actually think the technological shift will happen quicker. It makes perfect sense. That is what history tells us, at least from my examination of it. Technological shifts are fast. Monetary shifts are really slow. So a lot of this seems intuitive to me. It seems like things are kind of as they probably ought to be right now. And I spend a lot of time trying to make sure that is a sober perspective. Bitcoin has plenty of problems, but I think things like Demand Pool and Stratum V2 are far closer to solving Bitcoin's and Ocean and Datum. In fact, it's just cool to kind of see competition in that, because Stratum V2 is essentially what Datum is. It allows people to build their own block templates, which is going to decentralize or mitigate the biggest centralization concern of mining pools. I think that is a far bigger problem, because that threatens the potential censorship resistance of the foundational layer and the permissionlessness of the network itself. That is a much bigger concern to Bitcoin's eventual use as a medium of exchange and a global payment and monetary system than whether or not we have a circular economy among Bitcoiners right now. I mean, the fact that we're seeing so low blocks is a huge, huge, wonderful thing, that we're seeing this, even if it's this tiny underbelly of 1% or 2% of people starting to rethink about how to use Bitcoin mining, about subsidizing it with the need and use of its heat. I think these things are thinking about protecting Bitcoin long term and making sure the medium of exchange phase happens naturally, and when the liquidity of the markets and the demand of markets are ready for them, that it will still be here as a decentralized fortress of verification. And also, I think just eCash in general, but I think Cashew is just going to be a huge part of all of this. Cali has been blowing my mind with all the things. There's now multi-sig and like atomic swaps and stuff in Cashew payments. I talked about in my speech at BitBlock Boom, which I still just think this would work perfectly fine. I mean, I could be wrong about how eCash payments like kind of verified their relationship to the running server, but I don't think I'm misunderstanding it, but I could be. But I'll just lay out my simple idea here, is that the foundational thing that Bitcoin can provide are monetary assurances. Then on top of that, we can do payment autonomy, privacy, all sorts of these things. But the idea of being able to know that you are receiving payment or exchanging something for another asset, for a monetary good that can't be printed and is actually relevant, it is attached to the 21 million supply of Bitcoin, I think first and foremost, that is the biggest problem. And I don't think that because, oh, I'm so concerned with politics and I don't care and I'm not a cypherpunk. I think it purely because there are explicit metrics on the size of problems and how much money is created and where money shifts to and from between different classes and countries. And that problem is literally hundreds of trillions of dollars objectively. Like, we can look at the size of that problem, whereas retail and e-commerce payments and payment autonomy and privacy don't even touch it. Like, it doesn't even... it practically doesn't exist if you look at a comparison chart. That doesn't mean I don't value the other, and that doesn't mean that other people's lives are not entirely dependent on payment autonomy and privacy. But it is that the monetary assurance, more lives are dependent on the monetary assurances problem. Hierarchy of concerns. That matters. So how can you get monetary assurances and payment privacy? Which is the beauty of eCash, is that you can have a service provision that makes it very, very difficult to know who you're censoring or what payments you're censoring or who the payments are going to. Like, that alone is just, there's so much that can be mitigated and trade-offs that can be handled that are kind of beautiful in the fact that there are still trade-offs, but some things can, you're still able to get around some really serious problems for the consumer, for the average user, even in the absence of direct custody. But the model that I think could actually work or be really, really interesting, at least, is you have a multi-sig with, let's say it's one Bitcoin, right? Is I've saved my butt off. I've got my deep savings. I got like one Bitcoin and I put it in a multi-sig with Unchained, with OnRamp, with a key holder in Europe. Like, I separate out jurisdictions. I hold two of the keys myself, and this is all public on chain, so this is very easily verifiable and provable. And let's say it's a 3 or a 4 of 7 multi-sig. And then with that one Bitcoin UTXO, we issue a hash tree of eCash tokens and then put the Merkle root of that into the operaturn timestamp of that UTXO. And then we time lock that UTXO for 2 years or something. And then whenever you receive eCash, you can check it in the hash tree and just know that the Merkle root goes back, that is part of that one Bitcoin. Like, there's no risk of fractional reserve because you can check against the Merkle root that was one Bitcoin's worth of eCash and you have a piece of that one Bitcoin's worth of eCash. Like, boom, no monetary expansion, private payment network, service providers, yes, but a quorum of service providers. They may even have a smart contract, like a time lock limitation where they can't even do anything if you're only going to hold this for like 6 months because that is just locked up, end of story. And yes, that is custodial. Yes, that money, the Bitcoin itself is controlled by somebody else. But also your cashew is a bearer asset that has payment privacy. Probably some of the best payment privacy assurances out there. And I really think, I think that can prove that there has not been monetary inflation. It hasn't been rehypothecated. And it is explicitly within that one Bitcoin that you are using an eCash note. If I am wrong about how you can prove the supply and Merkle root of issued eCash, please let me know. I want to know if I have misunderstood that, not because I haven't dug into the explicit math or technicalities of how that works to know for sure. And I will happily correct myself if I am wrong about that. But I think that works. Maybe there's a lot more to it. Maybe there's something else that has to be put in place, and you know, the opening of the server that's running eCash so that you can see the code, whatever it is. I don't know. But I would love to hear somebody else's thought about that, because I think that's, you don't have a soft fork. There's no complicated anything. And that can provide a shocking amount of services, autonomy, privacy, and correction of problems in our banking system that is just multi-sig and eCash as designed. If I'm an idiot, let me know. But if that sounds like it makes sense and you want to build this, talk to me. Because I would love to see how this could work in practice, like in a really small environment. Like, let's test it out. Literally, that sounds like a really cool thing to me. I mean, it kind of sounds like what's great about state chains and something like Mercury Wallet without what seems like some of the complexity of the overhead there. But anyway, like I said, I don't know. There's a lot of technical details there that I don't know if I'm perfectly accurate on, so that might just be a dumb brainstorm of my own. But also Crux, I didn't know about Crux. I did not, until I read this Financial Freedom Report, I had no idea that Crux existed. But there is a open source firmware for Bitcoin signing devices, which is so cool. And I already am thinking of a way that I want to use this, because there's something I've been wanting to do in Pear Drive, or at least down the road in Pear Drive, because I want to think about this not only as just like really easy to use and stuff, but also having secure, like really secure and really hardcore peer-to-peer drives. And I think as the market for Bitcoin signing devices gets more and more saturated, or digital asset signing devices in general, because you know a lot of people will be using stablecoins and stuff with these as well. You know, as infrastructure becomes broader and a tool is more available and more people have them, possibilities begin to emerge that aren't possible without that infrastructure. Like cell phone and data infrastructure has to happen before a smartphone works, right? Before you have the iPhone. And again, everything in its right time. But basically, I really want to look into Crux. They specifically put a, you know, risk disclaimer that there has not been an independent security audit of Crux, but which makes me want to like help out and, you know, provide that or something. Not that I could do it myself, but that's just really exciting. I love the idea of an open firmware that anybody can use. The Taproot and Miniscript support is awesome. Miniscript is a perfect example of something that would enable the thing like the time lock and the 4 of 7 multisig that I was talking about that makes things easy and intuitive when you're designing them from a wallet perspective and a signing device perspective. Anchor has done some amazing things on that. Love those guys. They've killed it with the implementation there. So just cool to continue to see new developments on that front and new tools. Now, lastly, Principles of Bitcoin, that book. I believe I'm going to be talking to them about doing the audiobook. But I've heard a lot of good things about this from a couple different people, not just the people who have contacted me. But it's gotten me pretty excited about it, and hopefully I can get an audiobook out as quick as I possibly can. I'm really kind of finding we're a little bit better into the process and rhythm of things now. So hopefully that means, fingers crossed, a lot more time in front of the mic and more fresh content for you guys. And I can get back to some really, really cool stuff and so many things that I'm excited to share in the very, very near future. So stay tuned, stay subscribed. Thank you guys so much for listening. Don't forget to check out the amazing Human Rights Foundation. The link to this irreplaceable newsletter will be right in the show notes. Sign up, grab yourself a Jade Plus with 10% off, and use the BitKit wallet for Lightning, because that's how it's done. And with that, I will catch you on the next episode. And until then, take it easy, guys. Nothing is more important than that you see and love the beauty that is right in front of you, or else you will have no defense against the ugliness that will hem you in and come at you in so many ways. Neal Stephenson, Anathema.